Hello, everybody. Welcome to iOS Section 2. My name is Tommy MacWilliam, and today we're going to be looking at table views. So just like in Android, we had these list adapters where you could display a list of data. In iOS, we have table views, which you're familiar with if you've ever browsed music through your iPod. And with those table views, we'll also be taking a look at navigation controllers, so how we go back and forth among these different view controllers while maintaining a back button so the user can navigate through. So as always, all this is posted online. The source code is currently online, as well as these slides. You should be getting your student's choice feedback this week. So if you haven't received that already, it should be coming very soon. So today, in addition to these table views and navigation controllers, we're going to take a look at property lists. So these are basically key value pairs that are usually used to store something like app settings, but we can utilize these property lists because they're very nicely built into the Objective-C language as storing and retrieving data to, in this case, load into our table views. So let's just take a look at these plist files first. So in Xcode, you have this nice plist editor. You can see the keys and the values associated with your property list. So if you want to take a look at what that looks like, so if I just open up a simple property list, which we'll see more of soon, you can see here you have a list of keys on the left. You can change its type by just clicking on it. So you have these different types, which we'll take a look at shortly. And then you can just set its value. So to add a new key, you could just click on this little plus. To remove it, you would click the minus. So much nicer than having to go through and edit all of the XML. But if you do want to take a look at the XML, this is the format for it. Each of the keys of the key value pairs is going to have the element key. So your keys will always be strings. The value can take on a number of different data types, strings, it could be a numbers. We even have built-in support for things like date or data for more binary data or something like that, as well as NS arrays and NS dictionary, where an array is basically just a collection of objects, where a dictionary is key value pairs. So we can build up somewhat complex data structures because we could have dictionaries of arrays of strings, and so we can represent basically anything we could represent with JSON, which we took a look at earlier, which is basically the same idea. You have keys and values, where those values can also be keys and values. So we also noticed that we looked at this NS dictionary a few weeks ago, and an NS dictionary is just key value pairs. So Apple's oh so nicely implemented a way to easily read this plist right into an NS dictionary. So with almost no work at all, we can load and parse this plist file into an NS dictionary. And to do that, we're just going to use the message init with contents of file. And so we're just going to send it the path to this plist, and that's going to parse everything and put it into a dictionary for us. If we'd like to write a dictionary to a file, we can just send the write to file message to a dictionary object, and we can create a new plist file from scratch, and we can save it so our app can use it. Now, we have a different notion of resources on iOS than we do on Android. So in Android, we had this res folder and all these subdirectories, and everything is really organized. Where in iOS, we're dealing with something called bundles. And a bundle is basically just a package of information that your app has. So to get at your bundle on the file system, so to get that path where your app is located, you're going to use the NS bundle object, which has a message called main bundle, which just returns the path to the bundle for your app. So by just saying NS bundle main bundle, you're going to get the full path name to all your files so you can read and write them. Now, if you want to get a file out of the bundle, we could use this path for resource message. So the first argument is going to be the name of our file. So we just looked at a file called fruits.plist. So the first parameter would just be fruits. Now, we're not going to say .plist because that's our second parameter, which is of type. So we know we have a plist, so that's just going to be a plist. We don't have to worry about long string concatenations or path operators because this path for resource is going to go through any subdirectories we may create inside of our bundle to find the appropriate file. So that's it. Yep. So that's a good observation to point out for the camera that case sensitivity is important either way. So just make sure, when in doubt, assume case sensitivity matters. So that'll help you get through both the simulator and the device, which apparently might have different capitalization rules.
They do.
Which is interesting.
I think the simulator, ignores case, treats capital food the same as food, and the device doesn't.
Interesting, yeah. So apparently...
It runs on the device, it doesn't. simulator.
So yeah, so if you ever run into some issues of something running on the device and not running on the simulator, it might be because of your case sensitivity issues. That's a great observation. We could probably post that on help dot just to remind everybody online.
And Apple's official position is it's not a bug.
So Apple doesn't, oh, you could file a bug report if Apple doesn't think so.
I did.
Really?
And the answer is, it's not a bug because the emulator uses the Mac file system.
That's very interesting.
It's a philosophical
one. So bottom line, just when in doubt, assume case sensitivity matters. You can be good on both the simulator and on the device. So we'll be using these UI table views throughout this section. And like I said, it's basically the equivalent of a list adapter for Android. And it provides a way for you to take a model of data, whether that be an array, a dictionary, or whatever it is, and send that to a view so you can display it in a table view. Now, a table view is a little bit misleading because it's not as much a table as a table with one column, which is more a list than a table. But whatever, they're still called table views. So the way we're going to bind models to views is by implementing this UI table view data source protocol. And so we can use this protocol just like we've used any other protocol. It's going to give us a number of methods that we need to define in our controller in order for the table view to display correctly. So we also have this UI table view controller, which basically takes care of all that protocol stuff for you. So if we just inherit that controller, then we're going to get all the methods we need to implement. So here are the methods we need to implement. The first is the number of sections in the table view. So as you noticed, as you may have noticed on your iPod, you know, something like the artists are separated by letter. So you can see all the artists starting with an A, and there'll be a little A at the header. And so that's going to be a section of your table. So we can just define, either hard-coded or based on the length of some array, the number of sections we want in our table. Initially, we'll just use 1 here. So this method, we can just return 1, and there's just one section in our table. Now, once we've defined the number of sections, we now need to define the number of rows. So this is going to give you one argument, which is going to be an index path. And that's going to say, OK, I'm at this cell. I'm at this section. I need to know how many rows are inside of my section. And so again, we can just use something like the count of some model, whether that be a dictionary or an array. And if we just have one section, we don't really need to worry about this section argument, because there's just one, and we can just return the same thing no matter what. So next is the cell for row at index path. And this is the most important method, I would say, in implementing all of this. And this is what's actually going to render the cell. So we'll take a look at that next. But also know that there is this did select row at index path, which is really long. But it basically, once the user has tapped a cell, this method is going to fire. You don't have to worry about connecting things in Interface Builder. You just know that because this is in the protocol, that this is going to be fired whenever the user taps something. So this cell for row at index path, as I said, is going to be fired every time a cell needs to be rendered. So when we looked at Android, we had this notion of recyclable views, right? If we already have a view and it's no longer on screen, then we can just recycle that view by populating it with new data instead of bothering to go and allocate a new one. Because if it's off screen, we're obviously not using it. So in iOS, we have the same deal. So to do this, we're going to give each of our cells of a certain type what's called a cell identifier. And so this is basically just a string. So if we have a table that contains multiple different types of cells, which we'll see soon, one with subtitles, one that might have an image in it, we're going to need a way to identify that cell, because we don't want to be reusing a cell that has an image if we're trying to render a cell that has a subtitle. So most of the time, this string, we can just give this string a value and then not worry about it ever again. Most of the cells you'll implement will probably just be all of the same type, and so we can just use the same identifier throughout our table view. Now, in order to actually recycle the cell, we're going to call this DQ reusable cell with identifier. And so what this method is going to do is it's going to look in the cache of cells, so all those cells that have been scrolled off screen, and it's going to try to grab one if there are any cells that we're no longer using and reuse it, rather than allocating memory and wasting it by creating a new cell. So if this just returns nil, then we know there are no cells that are available, in which case we need to actually allocate a new one. If this does return a cell, then we can just change the cell's properties and display the data that we want to display. Now, one thing to note is that all of these methods are passing around an object that is of type NSIndexPath. So it's not giving you just the row and the section explicitly. Instead, it's basically passing around a container object that has properties for your row and your section. Now, an index path does not contain the actual cell data itself. Rather, it's basically the coordinates of the cell that the user touched or that you're rendering, which is going to be 0 index, which is nice because when we looked at CSS3, it was 1 index, which was kind of annoying. So when you get an index path, you aren't actually getting the cell. You're just getting where the cell is located in your model. And so you want to fetch the cell from your model, not try to render the index path. So some cell properties we'll initially be taking a look at. So to set the actual text of the cell, so the main cell text is stored in a property called textLabel. And so that property has another property called text, and that's actually going to be the actual text that is rendered in the cell. So this textLabel is the main text. We'll take a look at another type of textLabel, which isn't the main type. And we also have something called an accessory type. So you'll notice on a lot of iOS apps, over to the right of a cell, there's sometimes some kind of button. It could be a checkbox, or it could be a little blue arrow, or even it's a little gray arrow to the right. So each of those means something different. So the first one, the little gray arrow, is called a chevron, and it designates a drill down. So when you're browsing through your artists, you might see one when you click on an artist, and then you see that artist's album. So you're drilling down through a hierarchy until you reach a certain item. You can also have something called a detail disclosure button. So this is a little blue arrow that's tappable, unlike the previous. And so when the user taps that, they're going to get taken to a different place than if they had just tapped the cell. So usually tapping this blue cell will reveal some more detailed view of the data, whereas tapping the cell itself might take you to another controller, for example. And finally, if you want to make multiple cells selectable, we can use the checkmark accessory. And so this will say every time the user taps a cell, there's going to be a little checkmark that appears next to it. Until they tap the cell again, the checkmark is going to go away. So just some nice functionality that Apple's taking care of for you that you don't have to worry about implementing yourself. So we also have style attributes for the entire table. So you basically have two options. The first is going to be plain, and that's just the edge-to-edge rows that you'll typically see when browsing through your music. And your other option is called grouped. And this is the option you see when you're looking at, say, the Settings app on your iOS device. And you'll see these rounded corners, and the rows don't stretch all the way across the table, but you have some padding, and everything is rounded corners, and it looks all nice. So one more thing to note when you're creating your table views and interface builders, you want to make sure you connect your data source and your delegate to the appropriate place. So if you create a table view and interface builder, you need to tell it where all these methods implementing, you know, how the cells are going to be rendered, how many cells there are actually connected in the appropriate places. So again, don't forget about those connections. So let's take a look at what the code for a table view actually looks like. So here, in my main window, So notice here that this is the main window for my app, and it's basically empty. Because instead, we have this navigation controller object. So this navigation controller, we'll see soon, but this is going to take care of rendering the table view and going among table views. Now, inside of this navigation controller, we have another controller, which is called the root view controller. So throughout Xcode, you'll see this convention where if in a hierarchy, the first table view you're at is going to be called the root view controller. So kind of the root node of an XML document, the first one, the parent, topmost parent, is called the root. So if we take a look at our root view controller, here is where we're going to define our table view. So you'll notice that we're inheriting from the UI table view controller, and so that's taking care of implementing the protocol, so it's going to say that we need to implement these methods. So in here, I've defined two things. Don't worry about the second one for now. But we have an NS mutable dictionary. And so this is going to be the model for our table. It's going to be a dictionary containing fruits, which are going to be read from this plist file. So that's it for the interface. So if you look at the implementation file, we synthesize whatever. And so here, we're now reading from this fruits.plist file. So just like I mentioned, it's really this simple to parse a plist file and now have an Objective-C object representation of it. So
imagine for a moment a person who read the course description and saw that it was not necessary to know IMS or Objective-C, and he did not know how to come up with these seemingly random calls. How would he discover this?
So how would someone discover this if you're looking to learn something on your own that wasn't covered in the course? So we did recommend two really great books. I believe at least one of them has an example of working with plists. If not Google is your friend, iOS is such a popular development platform that there are plenty of random bloggers out there who have written a post on, say, how to parse a PLIS file or something like that. But I would definitely recommend either of the books you've recommended or other iOS books out there. They tend to be really comprehensive as far as covering all the Objective-C methods you would need to use. But Google would definitely be my first resource. You know, Google parse plist Objective-C and see what you get. So here we're parsing the plist file, and now we have this mutable dictionary. So now we have our number of sections in table view. There's just one section, so really simple, we just return one. Now the number of rows in each section, we only have one section, so we can just return the size of our dictionary, because we have one row for each item in our dictionary. So now here's the most interesting method. Now, this is where we're actually creating the cell. So first, we're just creating a cell identifier. We're just calling it cell. It doesn't really matter what this value is because we only have one cell identifier in our entire table view. So this code, when you created a new project next code, all of this was actually generated for you. And so Xcode decided that cell was a great cell identifier for a cell. So now here's where we're going to attempt to reuse the cell. So we create a new UI table view cell. And we're calling this DQ method. So we're saying, is there anything in the cache I can use? Now, if there is nothing in the cache, cell is going to return nil, and now we're allocating a new cell. So again, all these method calls were written by Xcode for us, and we're not going to touch them for now. Yep?
Question. When you created this view with nib, what did you put in the view with nib? I mean, I have totally missed a step here as to the part where Xcode actually created these.
Oh, sure. So you actually probably didn't miss a step only because Xcode actually does all of that for me. So if I were to create a new project, so I'm going to say a navigation-based application.
Okay, this is navigation based.
Yes, so these are navigation based. And so when I create this, it's actually going to create my root view controller. It's going to take care of all of that for me. So I didn't do anything literally.
Okay.
Yeah. So when I create, I can. I guess I'll go through and do it. So I create this. Call it test. So now I've just created it, and you'll see I already have this root view controller. I open up the main window, it's already attached to, there's my navigation controller with a reference to root view controller, and all of these methods are already sort of implemented for me.
Yeah, I mean, you've obviously gone beyond that, but this is
right. Yeah, so
boilerplate that you get.
Yes, Xcode gives you a really, really big boilerplate, so I apologize for not making that more clear, but I didn't actually wave my hands. Oh yeah, no. So Xcode does a whole lot for you, even gives you these optional methods, all of which we're going to take a look at shortly. So any other questions on the table view so far? Okay, so right now we have an NS dictionary. So when I'm passed a row number, I can't just get a row number from a dictionary, right? We have key value pairs, and there's no key called 0 or 1. My keys are just the fruit names, if we looked at that plist again. So in order to get the, say, second key, I'm going to send this all keys method to self.fruit. So remember, what this does is returns an array of all the keys inside of my dictionary. Now, if I say object.index, which is a message I pass to an array, I'm going to give it this index path.row. So this row wasn't passed to me explicitly. It was passed via this container object of an NS index path. And so now I'm going to get the string back from my dictionary. Now, we're also setting the accessory type to this long thing, but we're going to have a little blue disclosure button. So now if I run this, you'll see I have this really nice table view. Now, I really didn't do much other than tell it what to display the table view, but these values here are coming from my NS dictionary, and this blue button is the detailed disclosure button. Now, if I tap the cell or tap the button, we're going to have different behaviors. And so now let's take a look at how we achieved that. So with our table views, it's natural to want to have a hierarchy, right? On Android, we had this hardware button, this back button. So we didn't really have to worry about implementing a back button ourselves. It was implied the user would just press the hardware back button. Not so much on iOS, because you just have a home button. So we need this object called a navigation controller that, just like Android, is going to maintain a stack of view controllers. So when we go to a new view controller, it'll be pushed on top of the stack, and we can pop controllers off the stack to go backwards in our hierarchy. So the two methods to do that are push view controller and pop view controller. And so both of these take a single parameter that is a pointer to the next view controller to put on or onto the stack. So inside of every UI view controller that is managed by a navigation controller, we have these two properties. The first is a reference to the navigation controller. And so, like I said, every UI, this is a property of a UI view controller. So every UI view controller that is managed by a navigation controller automatically has the self.navigation controller property. If you try to call us on something that is not managed by a navigation controller, you're just going to get back nil, so let's not do that. We also have this navigation item. And so this is the navigation bar that's displayed at the top of the app. So we can do a couple things with that. We can change its title. That's just going to be an NS string. And we can also add buttons to the left and the right of the navigation item. So if we just use UI buttons here, we can just set these equal to them, or we can do this also through Interface Builder. So we'll see both ways of doing that. So when you're pushing a new view controller, you don't want to forget about that at class, that forward class declaration, and the pound import. So inside of your interface, you want to use at class and then hash import inside of your implementation, or else the compiler is going to be really confused because you're trying to access these classes that it hasn't created, but you've created, and it doesn't know what they are. So if you've got compile errors where you're trying to work with navigation controllers, just make sure that you have both of those declarations. So there are two ways that we can push a new view controller, just like there are two ways to, say, add a button to our window, one through Interface Builder and one through code. So Interface Builder, it's a little more complicated, but the first thing you want to do is create an outlet inside of your interface. You want to say that from this view controller, I want to go to my next view controller. So you need to have a pointer to that view controller inside of that interface so we know what to push onto the stack. So like we saw, that method took a pointer to a view controller, so we need to have one. So now we're going to add a view controller object inside of our Interface Builder. So it's kind of down the bottom, and we're just going to drag that, as we saw in lecture, all the way to the left, and that's going to add it to our project. So now we need, with this view controller, right now it's just a generic view controller. It doesn't reference anything in our project. And so we need to do that. So first we need to set its class name to whatever we want it to be a view controller of, and then we need to set the nib file so it knows what to display. And then finally we just need to connect this to the outlet we created in our interface by dragging it to the file's owner. So we'll take a look at how I did that, but that's just the five-step process. From code, it's a little bit simpler. We just need to alloc a new instance of our view controller, and then we call this init with nib name. And so this is just going to take the name of the nib that's going to be rendered to the controller as a string, and then that's it. We've created it, and we can just push it using the push view controller method. Now, do not forget to call release when you're creating these new view controllers. Just like we saw with the alert viewer lecture today, you generally call release right after you push it onto the stack. So when you push it, that's going to take care of incrementing the retain count. And you want to call release inside of the method you created it in. So same deal with the alert view, basically. So now, let's take a look at some other UI views that you might find useful throughout your projects. So in the examples we'll see today, we're using an image view and a web view. So just syntactically, how to work with these two things, a UI image view has a property called image, and that's going to be the UI image that should be displayed in the image view. So to get an image out of your resources in your bundle, we can just use this image named. And so this is going to take a path to an image. Now remember, we can use this NS bundle main bundle thing to get the path to anything, any resource inside of our project. So that's pretty simple. We also have this really nice content mode property, which takes care of things like scaling while maintaining the aspect ratio, which would have been handy a while ago, I assume. So these are your different ways to do that. We can scale to fill, so that's just going to scale it like what you weren't supposed to do. Scale aspect fit, so that's going to scale it to fill the whole image, so the whole area, and as best it can, not filling the whole area if it can't. And then finally, this scale aspect fill is where it's going to crop it if that's going to make it fill better. So probably three different ways you ended up cropping it while implementing NPuzzle. So finally, the UI web view. This basically is going to embed a nice WebKit browser inside of your project. It's a little bit of a convoluted process to simply make a request to a URL, because this load request message, which we can send to an instance, is going to take an NS URL request. Now, we need to get an NS URL request object from an NS URL. And we need to get an NS URL from an NS string. So the process of loading a request involves creating these three auxiliary objects, but just necessary given what each of these messages takes as a parameter. So we'll look at how to do that in one line of code right now. Oh boy. Actually, I'm just going to decrease the font size a little bit, given that that didn't work. Okay, so I will zoom in. So here, we've taken care of rendering the cell. So next, we're implementing the method didSelectRow at index path. So this is when we've actually tapped a cell, and the parameter to this is still an index path. So same thing we were working with before. So in this case, when we actually tap the cell, we're going to create a new controller from code. So like I said, really simple, we're just going to allocate a new fruit image view controller, and we're going to send it our nib name. So I've called it fruit image view controller. You notice that you don't need to pass it the .xib. We just need the file name itself without the extension. So now we're setting some properties of this view controller, which we'll take a look at next. And now we're pushing it onto the stack. We're saying we do want it to be animated, so it'll slide and fade for us. And then we're releasing it inside of the same method. So like I said, the pushing takes care of the retain count, so you're not going to lose it if you call release right here. So let's take a look at this class itself so we can understand what these properties are. So here's our nib. It just has a label, and then here's our UI image view. So we've created properties for both of those things. And we also have a bar button. So we're going to put a button at the top of our navigation item that the user can tap and interact with. Now we also have a property representing the fruit. So this is going to be what's displayed in the title. Now we're not going to initialize this ourselves. We're just kind of going to assume that whatever controller is calling this has taken care of filling in all of these properties. Now we also could have just made a method like init with nib name and fruit and image name, which is one way we could do it, or we could just say, let's make sure we define these properties before we use them. What you want to do is up to you. And then a string of the image name, which will also be passed to us. So now, on this view will appear, So the view will appear, we're doing three things. First, we're setting the title of this view controller with the self navigation item title. And then we're just setting the label. And finally, we're doing this UI image with image name. And we're assuming that the self.image name is the full path to the image name. So that was pretty simple. So now when we actually push it, you can see that we are populating those two properties. So the next view controller can just work with them. So now you notice we have this little, we have that little blue button. And so when that is tapped, there's a different method that's fired, and that is the accessory button tapped for row with index path. And so here, we're basically going to take us to a different view controller. So I've created this other view controller called the fruit web view controller. So we'll take a look at that. But you'll notice that I'm not allocating or calling init with nib name here. And the reason for that is I've defined this inside of my nib. So if we look back here, you'll notice that I've created an IB outlet for my view controller. So that means that I'm going to be able to connect it from my nib. So if we look at the nib, here we have our view controller, and it's been connected to the file's owner. And I've also remembered to set two things. So the first, not the quick help. So the first is going to be the class. So by default, this is just a generic UI view controller, but I've used this dropdown to change its class to the class that I want to be using. And I've also made sure that I've changed the nib name to be the controller that I'm using instead of just the blank value. So now that's all connected nicely, and I can run my app. So here we go. So if I tap on a cell, I'm just taken to a view that just displays the UI image of the passed value. And then if I tap on this button, we just get this alert view, which we'll take a look at. Now if I tap the blue button, we get a different action, and we're taken to the Wikipedia page for whatever fruit that I clicked. So any questions on that behavior? Yep.
When you set the title for above the image, there's a comment before that.
So this super view will appear?
Just under that. So the navigation item title itself, that's not, there's a string under that, but what's the one?
Oh, sure. So this navigation item is going to be the navigation bar that's displayed. And this self.fruit is just an NS string. And so we're just setting the title to be the NS string. So when I fetch the Wikipedia article, I'm similarly just using that string. Wow, that is unfortunate. So much for style. OK. So I'm doing something clever, and I'm basically appending whatever fruit I've been passed to the string enwikipedia.org/wiki/, and so this will form the URL that I'm looking for. And so then I'm just loading the requests. And so here, as I mentioned, it's kind of this long process, but I'm loading a request from an NSURL request that has an NSURL with the string that. So any questions at all on this first example? Okay, so let's take a look at some other stuff we can do. Actually, before that, let's take a look at a more elaborate example. So in this case, instead of just drilling down to one new controller, I'm going to have a hierarchy. So just to give you a feel for what this app is going to do, let's run it first. And I claim that this is actually the first useful app I've made for this entire course, but I would actually find this useful on my iPod. So here we have a list of MLB leagues. We have the American and the National. So this is a view controller. Now if I click on one of the leagues, I'm taken to a new view controller. And so here we have a drill down of the different divisions. So if I were to click on a division, unbiasedly, we're going to have a list of teams. And if I click on a team, then I'm going to be taken to that team's homepage. So let's take a look at how I did that. Oh boy, we're probably losing again. So, from our root view controller, we just have our dictionary of leagues. So because we're using a dictionary, we're probably using a plist again. And in fact, we are. I've created this teams.plist, which is a bit more elaborate than our previous, because this has a type of dictionary now. So our first key is American and National. We can drill down and see we have more dictionaries, and then finally strings. So nothing special there. So are the strings URLs for websites? No, I'm actually doing something even trickier here. But the string is actually just the abbreviation for each of the teams. So I'll show you how I use that instead of trying to find the URL for each of the teams. Oh boy, style is killing me. So now, just like we did before, we're using this divisions view controller. So this is the view controller that's going to display the divisions, and we're passing in a dictionary. So we have a dictionary of dictionaries now, so we can pass in a second dictionary, which is basically going to form our hierarchy. So as we drill down, we're passing in a more specific dictionary containing a smaller subset of the data until eventually we just get down to a single team. So from the divisions, we're doing something really simple. We're just going to create a new teams, and we're going to pass it the same thing until eventually we get down to something a little more useful. And this is the actual web view controller. So again, I'm just calling this load request method. But you'll notice that as I was browsing through and trying to find URLs, I noticed that they actually all have the same format. And there's this kind of master site that takes an argument to the page, the CID equals something. And that's actually just the three-letter team ID. So if we just go to mlb.mlb.com and pass in the abbreviation for the team as the CID, it'll actually redirect you to that team's homepage. So that's a little fun fact. And so that's kind of how I'm leveraging not putting the entire URL inside of the plist, but just that abbreviation. So any questions on hierarchies? It's basically the same example we just looked at, but we can using our stack, we can push more and more view controllers onto the stack. And this back button is going to take me through them without me having to do anything. I didn't implement any back button. This is just a functionality that's implemented by the UI navigation controller itself. And so all I need to do is just push things onto the stack when I need them, and the navigation controller is going to take care of all the hierarchical stuff for us. So any questions on that hierarchical drill down app? All right. So now we can take a look at some cooler things we can do with our table views. So like I said, we can have different sections. And each of those sections can have a different number of rows. We're given this number of rows in section. We're not given the number of rows in every single section. We're given the number of rows in a specific section. So just keep that in mind when you're implementing this. But our sections can also have headers and footers. So this is text that's going to be displayed at the beginning and or at the end of your section. So by implementing these methods, we can give the NS string that's going to be displayed. So it's not a property. We're going to control this using methods. So with our sections, how appropriate because this is section. But now in this app, I've created two plist files. So one is just a list of some stores in Harvard Square. Another is a list of restaurants, all of which I recommend. So now we're doing something a little fancy. So before, we looked at dictionaries. And in order to get, say, the second index out of our dictionary, we first created it into an array by using this all keys message, which returned an array. So here, I'm going to convert it into an array immediately. So first, we're loading from our dictionary. And now, we're creating a new array. And we're using this initWithArray method. So rather than iterating through the array and doing set value for key for each of the elements in the array, I can just say init with array, and now I have an array of all the keys. So why am I bothering to do this? But let's say I want to do something like alphabetize everything inside of my table view. Now, a dictionary does not have an explicit list of keys. So Objective-C doesn't say, you can order this table if you want. Inside of its dictionary, it's going to say, I'm going to put the keys in whatever order that I find most efficient. So we cannot order an NS dictionary. There's no way of sorting it. With an array, we can obviously sort. And to do that, I'm just using the sort using selector method. And this basically takes a selector that's going to be called in order to sort the array. So if I just pass it in a generic comparison method, so compare, then this is going to take care of sorting everything in ascending order. So a really cool way to sort without implementing your own bubble sort or something. Yes, so I did not define compare. That's built in. It's just the way Objective-C is going to compare like a generic object. If you wanted to define your own method, you certainly could. If you had an array of objects and you wanted to sort by a movie title or movie release date, you could define your own selector to use here, and you could sort the data however you want. There's also a class called the NSSort Descriptor, which basically does that for you. You can specify the key for an object you want to sort by. So if you want to look at the documentation for an NSSort Descriptor, that's an even easier way to sort objects. But because I'm just sorting strings, I'm just using this compare. Yep?
Does it need to be a mutable array in this case, though, really, because you're not adding stuff to it, right?
So it doesn't need to be a mutable array in this case, no. I'm just in the habit of typing NS mutable dictionary. It does not need to be mutable. In the next example, it will need to be mutable because we're going to be modifying the table view. But no, it does not explicitly need to be mutable. Even to be sorted, I don't believe so, because the sort using selector is probably passed to a generic array. I'm actually not sure. Using mutable certainly doesn't hurt and probably creates minimal overhead. So I just use mutable in case I need to. Yeah?
It's actually modifying the array, right?
So yes, it's actually modifying the array. We're not returning a new one. So that all depends on if Apple decided mutable means you can call add object, or if mutable means it can modify it behind the scenes. You can easily look up the documentation for if this message is passed to an NS array or the specific subclass of NS array. But mutable will always work. So now, because I have multiple sections, I'm going to create another array that manages each of the sections. So here, I have an array of arrays. So I could more easily display the data later. So now when I actually want to display the row itself, I could do one of two things. First, I could do something based on what the section value is. So I know that I'm going to display stores and then sections. So I could say, well, if the section is 0, then I'm going to do something with stores, or I'm going to do something with restaurants. And so here is where we're creating these header and the footer. And so these values are going to be displayed on the top and the bottom of each of these sections. So we'll take a look at what that looks like. But when we're actually rendering the cell, it's pretty handy to have an array of arrays because we can just say, well, I want the array at the section, and then from the array I get back, I want the object at the row. And so that's a really simple way of rendering both of these sections without having to worry about each of these cases. Because if I wanted to do something like switch the order between sections or restaurants, or add 20 more sections, it would get really annoying to have to do this, where if we use an array of arrays, it's going to handle that automatically. So if we just take a look at what these section headers and footers look like on an app. So here, you can see this stores is displayed before the section, and this, I hope you like the stores, is displayed afterwards. And so you notice that all these keys are sorted because we're no longer using a dictionary. So these headers and footers actually look pretty different depending on what table style you're using. So if I go into my root view controller, select my table, and go over here to the attributes inspector, you'll see that right now my table style is plain. And so this is the edge-to-edge view. But if I change it to grouped, which is going to be what we saw in the first example, and run it, so now this looks, I would say, a bit nicer, these section headers and footers. And you can see that all this background and the font stuff is all taken care of for me. And so that's what the section headers and footers are going to look like on the different types of tables. So any questions on using sections?
If you want collapsible sections, so that you can, instead of having, you're just looking for restaurants and you don't care about stores. But you want to, you know, I'm thinking like a widget to open or close that section.
Yeah, so like if you want to have collapsible sections, that's not built in, but the table view for you. Yeah. But you could certainly do fancy things like having a tab bar along the top of the navigation item or something, and then you could basically, you know, tap a different item and it would display a different section, or even something like if I tap this first cell, then I'm going to change all the cells below it, or something like that. But that functionality is sadly not built into the table view, so you kind of have to implement that yourself. Yep?
According to the documentation, only NSMutable array can be sorted, but NSArray has methods, similar methods that return a newer array.
Oh, so there you go. So the answer to the earlier question I wasn't sure on was an NSMutable array we can just call sort, and we can modify it in place, where if we're using a generic NSArray that we can return a sorted array. So that's the answer to that. So thank you. Okay. So now that we have sections, let's take a look at having an editable table view. So this is really nice because Apple implements a ton of stuff for us that we don't have to worry about. And so the main of these being this thing called an edit item button. And so this is a built-in button that we didn't have to write ourselves that takes care of this little button in the right-hand corner that says edit. When you click edit, it's going to, well, actually, let me just show it to you instead of trying to explain it. Okay, so suffice to say, we're using this edit button, and you can see this edit in the top right. Now, if I click on edit, it does this really cool thing for me. Now we can see we can delete items and we can move items. So if I click on this, I have the option to delete it from the table. And if I click on this move icon over here, I can actually move items around. So I did none of this. This was all implemented for me. All you have to take care of is implementing the back-end stuff. So that's really cool. So some of the back-end stuff you have to take care of is first you need to tell the table view what cells are editable. So you could say, can edit row, or you could say either this row is editable, this row is not, or you could just return yes and the whole table is editable, which is what I did. Next, we specify if you can move it. So editing, meaning that little delete button. Moving it, meaning you can move the cell around in the table. And so that's a different method where you do the same thing as previously. Now to handle when the user has either edited the table or moved rows around, you're going to get two different callbacks. This commit editing style is going to say that I committed an edit operation or I deleted a row. And it's going to tell you what row that was deleted or this move row at index path. It's going to say I move this row from this position to this position. And so in both of these cases, we need to update our models because our model needs to reflect what's displayed in the view. So if we're using arrays, we need to make sure we swap elements accordingly, delete elements, or whatnot. So if there's ever some state where it's, you know, you're telling your view that you have an array of four, but it only has three in it, then your app is going to crash. So we need to make sure that whenever the user makes a change to our view, we update our models accordingly, or else your app's going to be pretty unhappy with you. So same deal, loading things from a plist. And now we are implementing some extra methods. So this can edit row, we're just returning yes. They're all editable. You'll notice the little delete icon appeared on each of them. We're setting the right item to be the self edit button item. So this is going to add that edit button to the top right of our navigation item. And so all of this state change is all handled for us. We don't have to worry about that. What we do have to worry about is just updating the model. So here, this commit editing style, we're saying if the user performed a deletion, which they probably did, then we want to remove that object from our array. So we're saying remove the object at the row the user deleted. If we're doing something with sections, we need to get the appropriate section array and then delete that, just as we did with rendering it. And so this update view, so this, again, was written for me. I didn't actually have to write this myself. But what this call is basically going to do is it's going to fade out the view. So this is going to modify the view. It was written for me. I didn't have to worry about it. I did have to worry about updating the model, but luckily that's pretty simple. And we'll take a look at the save plist momentarily. And now we have the move row at index path. So the perhaps naive approach of implementing this would just be to swap the items that were switched, right? If we move from 0 to 3, we just need to swap 0 and 3. However, that's not the case based on what's going on in our app, right? I mean, if we click edit and we say move apple down to tomato, we did more than just switch position 0 and 2 because you'll notice these other things are bubbling around two positions. So we can't just swap. Instead, what we're going to do is we're just going to wipe out the array and create a new one. So we're going to save the value that was moved. So we'll get that string. And now we're taking it out of the array. So when I call remove object at index, we're effectively adjusting each of the positions below it. So if I remove, say, the second object, any objects that were after position 2 are going to be moved back a space. So all that's taken care of for you, luckily. And then we're just going to insert the object that we just removed into the right position. So the method is insert object at index. And so we're going to insert the saved value. We need to save it because we just removed it and it's gone now. And so we're going to insert that at the index where the user moved it to. So a little different way of implementing this, but as I said, we can't just swap them because of this bubbling. So any questions on how we're handling the model for both delete or move? Okay. So is it just doing that one at a time? Yeah. So whenever the user drops, so they let go of the row, this is going to be called. So just like whenever the user selects delete, you can only move or delete a row one at a time. So every time that happens, this is going to be fired. So stylistically, do we write model classes or just use the controllers? So it's up to you. So if you have something more complex than just strings, which we have here, you're probably going to want to create a class. So I could have created like a team object, and that team had an ID, it had a URL, it had a name, a location, or whatever. And if you have more complex data types, that's exactly what you're going to want to do. I'm only not doing that because I'm just passing around strings. But stylistically, your model is probably going to be a class with properties, yeah. Okay, so nothing new here. But you'll notice I'm calling this save plist method in two places. First, when I delete something, and I'm also calling it up here in view will appear. And the reason I'm doing that is because I want to save the state of my application. So if the user deletes a row, the next time they fire up the app, I want that row to be gone. I've also implemented the ability to add items. So to do this, I've created another view controller. I'll call this add fruit view controller. That's going to be pushed on the stack once I click this add button. Now I can enter a fruit. Whoa, I can spell it. I click done, and it's added to my array, and I can now see it. So let's take a look at how I did that. So when I click this add button, I have this add button pressed. And so I've wired this up using Interface Builder because I've used an IB action. So here I've added this bar button item over here into my nib, and I've connected this to files owner, in which I've declared a bar button item as an outlet. So that connection was made just as you would expect. And then I've also wired up the event for that button to this action. Is there a question? Yep?
A little faster. Why was the button not really visible in the window over there? You're just showing us there in the nib file.
Oh, so if we go back into the nib. So this is just the table view. So this nib only contains a table view where it's the navigation item that is going to be it's going to be added to. So when we're using a navigation controller, we're not creating like a new menu bar and everything for every view controller. It's basically being reused. So our view controller is basically just this table view. So because this navigation item is a property of a generic view controller, it's going to be able to access that even though it's not displayed and we don't have to worry about it inside of our nib file. But we can add the button inside of our nib file even though there is no navigation controller visible. Okay, so let's take a look at how I implemented this add feature. So when this is pressed, I'm going to allocate a new view controller, and I'm going to send it my list of fruits. Now when I add a new fruit, all I'm doing is I'm using this text field should return, just like we looked at last time. So this method will be called whenever the user presses that done button. And now I'm just adding it to the array, and I'm popping this off the stack. So why does that work? I mean, I passed the array to this view controller. Why would those changes be reflected in the previous view controller? And that's because we're using this retain property. So when this was passed, we're just saying, OK, we're going to retain that previous array, and I'm actually still working with that pointer. I didn't create a new array. I'm still working with the array that's used by the previous view controller. And so that's why we're using retain. If I use copy, this feature wouldn't work. So one more thing, we're going to be able to handle restoring the state after the app has been finished. So I'm in the wrong place. So I have this save plist method. And here I'm creating a new dictionary because right now everything is stored as an array and I can't write an array to a plist. I can only write a dictionary. So I'm going to iterate through my array and just insert everything that was in our array. So our plist, it just has keys. There are no values associated with it because I'm just working with these keys. So if I just set an empty string for each of the items present in our array as the keys. So then I'm calling this write to file. And again, we're using this bundle so I can get at that fruits.plist file. And it's been written. So just really briefly how this works. So let me quit this and detach it. OK, so let's close everything running. Now if we fire it up and we're going to say, you know, let's add a new fruit. I'll add the kiwi again. Still can't spell it. And we're going to say delete the tomato because that's not a fruit anyway. So now if we hit the home button, we've now quit our app, right? So if we reopen it, we're going to be super impressed that our state was saved. However, you'll notice that we've also saved the state of our editing. I mean, I didn't save that in the plist anywhere. How did that happen? Now you'll remember that Apple doesn't kill your app when you just hit this home button. Instead, it's just backgrounded. And so when it's backgrounded, it's going to save all that state for you. So now before we're really impressed, let's actually kill the app and now reopen it. And you'll notice that now the kiwi is there and the tomato is gone. The observant, however, will notice that before the kiwi was at the end of my table view and now it's in the middle. And that's because, as I mentioned, this NS dictionary does not maintain an order. There's no order associated with it and there's no way to associate an order with it. So once I write a new dictionary, it's totally arbitrary where all these keys are going to pop up. So any questions on that editable table view?
You don't have this one sorted?
So no, I don't have this one sorted. I could easily sort it, though, using the same way I did before, but this one is not.
So what do you mean?
So where did I load that list from? So inside of my supporting files group, I just have this plist. And so this is the file that I'm manipulating inside of my app. Right, so well, I'm actually writing to my resource bundle. So this is a file that's inside of my bundle, and I can access that file, and I can write to it. And so the reason I detached it and killed it was because if I hit run again, I'm actually going to reinstall the app, and so my changes are gone now. So this change is on the device. It's not going to write to your actual Mac file system and change the file inside of your Xcode project. It's just going to be on the device. So we are actually modifying a file on the device with this. Other questions? Yep.
Other methods when you actually grab the plist information to do things like sort it entity after sort it after it's in the array.
So when do you actually sort it? So we can sort it really at any time as long as we actually have an array. So if we go back to our previous example.
I know I remember sort of the way I was wondering the array methods on when you grab the array, when you read into this file, then you can do it at that point beyond just grabbing it.
Right, so the easiest way is just to sort it as soon as we grab it. But there is this other method, which I believe I'm calling somewhere in here, called reload data. And so what that's going to do is it's going to kind of invalidate the whole table, and it's going to force it to reload everything. So if I needed to sort the file in a different method, I could just sort the array and then call reload data. And that's going to force the entire thing to reload, and then our table would be sorted if our array was sorted. So I don't have to. It's just easiest to sort it back there. Does that answer your question? Or?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so really quickly, just things we can do with our cell styles. So right now, we've just been displaying a single line of text in each of our cells, but that's kind of boring. So we can do a few things. We can change it to be a subtitle, and so that'll be below it. Or we can also display data either to the right of it or have it be the same size. So just really quickly, if we take a look at what that'll do. So now inside of my cell for row, you'll notice we have this initWithStyle. And so by default, it's just this cell style default. Now if I change this to something like cell style subtitle, I can start working with this property called detailTextLabel. This is basically another text label that'll be displayed inside of your cell, usually to display, you know, additional data to the item that's currently in there. So if I set this to subtitle, and I'm just going to associate some information with each cell and I run it. Then we're going to get this. So now I've associated this detail label, which each of these things, and it's kind of the subtitle for the cell. So let's just take a look at one more. So this value 1, rather than putting it below it, is going to put it all the way over to the right. So same property, this detail text label. And if I change this to value 2, perhaps not the most descriptively named things, we're going to get something like this, where they're the same size, but the detail is still next to it. So any questions on cell styles? They're pretty simple to work with. You're just going to change the initWithStyle when you're creating a new cell. And because you're reusing those cells, their styles are going to be maintained throughout the table. All right, if not, then that's it for this week. And we'll see you next week.